Do you regard black magic as being purely fictitious, or is there some truth in it?
Some truth? 100% truth. There is nothing fictitious about black magic, in any way whatever. It is a fact. It is a fact which has existed for several thousand years. I mean, when we talk about black magic, we are talking about Satanism, necromancy, alchemy, witchcraft, the worship of Satan.
Welcome back to the channel, everybody. And before we get into today's video, I just wanted to make an announcement and let you know that I am going to be making a new YouTube channel with Jazz, purely for philosophy. Don't worry, I will still be producing videos for this channel. However, so much of the content that I produce on here requires such a rich philosophical understanding of a myriad of topics. And as a result, me and Jazz have both decided to create this new channel to go hand in hand with this one, in order to facilitate a more complete and holistic understanding of some of the more complex topics discussed here on this channel. As I've previously stated in many videos, the ideas that I discuss on this channel are nothing new. They have just been occulted from us, purposely, so you've got no way of educating yourself. So the aim of this new channel is to introduce you to some of the most important and quintessential thinkers of our time, and understand how their theories regarding the nature of reality can be understood and applied to the world we live in today. We're going to be discussing the ideas of Plato, Heidegger, Schopenhauer, Nietzsche, Plotinus, Aristotle, Berkeley, Sheldrake, Descartes, and many, many more. And before this channel is released, I will be making another video to give you guys a link to it. So don't worry about trying to work out when it's up and stuff, because I will make another announcement in a video once we have made it and released it. So keep your eyes open for that. Now for today's topic. In this installment, we will be discussing chaos magic, sigils, and egregors, and the ideas of modern company logos as egregors. Okay, so let's get into it. Now, sigils are designed for a specific magical purpose. They are symbolic icons that are condensed representations of more complex ideas or information. And it was from astrology that the word sigil became acknowledged as an occult device with great power. Typically, a sigil is a line diagram symbolizing the unpronounceable name of a spirit or a non-physical entity, almost like a form of pictorial signature of the spirit. To know the name of the spirit gives the magician the power to command the spirit. Sigils are part of ceremonial magic and are used for conjuration of angels, demons, and other spirits and non-physical entities. In more modern times, the sigil has been reinvented as a monogram of thought, a graphite symbol created with the sole purpose of fulfilling the magician's desired outcome, a personal desire or set of desires. The term sigil is derived from the Latin word sigilla, sigillum, and signum. And in terms of magic, it's generally understood to mean sigil, seal, signature, or little picture. Sigils are also called by different names depending on their layout. For example, like a seal or a pentacle. Now, a seal is a sigil placed in a circle. It gives the conjurer the power to capture the spirit and command it. That's why the circle is imperative. A pentacle is a type of talisman drawn on floors, walls, and doors, and used in magic evocations for protection. Now, all religious symbols count as sigils. In fact, they're actually something called egregors, but we will get into that shortly. Religious symbols date back to prehistory, when humans first used images to infer intent, which is magical will, making it possible for the creator of the sigil to receive something or make something change in the universe, themselves, or in other people, to summon and control outside entities. In the ancient pre-Christian era, the term magic referred to arcane and esoteric knowledge. If somebody had the knowledge to ward off illness or misfortune, or gain favour with the gods, by whatever means, they were considered to be a form of magician. Their ability to produce magic sigils to ward off negative vibrational frequencies, counteract the devil, and offer protection from sorcerers and witches continued unabated into the early Judeo-Christian tradition, with the cross being the utmost symbol of protection. Now, one difference between the priest and the sorcerer was that one employed magic for religious purposes while the other used it for their own ends. The concept of a sigil became established during the late medieval and Renaissance period, roughly from 1350 to around the 1700s. During this time, magicians used sigils to call upon angels, demons, and other spirits. Each spirit has its own sigil, representing its essence, a sort of signature or spiritual autograph. Now, these are the higher magic skills associated with black magic. Magicians created and studied these symbols, publishing lists of them in magical training books called grimoires. By the beginning of the 20th century, science and rationale had played a monumental role in the realizing of magical practice. Self-professed adepts such as Aleister Crowley and Austin Osman Spare rejected the traditional Renaissance magic, taking the sigil out of ritual and employing them in their personal quests of mystical exploration as monograms of thought. Now, just to help elucidate this idea a little more, here is an example of a sigil, a seal, a pentacle, and a thought sigil. Right, now, as I previously stated, sigils are symbolic icons, condensed representations of more complex ideas or information designed for a specific magical purpose. And over the centuries, a myriad of magicians have developed multiple different ways and methods of creating these sigils. Traditionally speaking, a sigil represents a line diagram representing either the unpronounceable name of a spirit or a thought symbol representing the accomplishment of a desired end, such as writing down a result in a symbolic form and then burning it to ensure its success. Sigils are created using various techniques such as binding and number ciphering. Those sigils that are drawn in a continuous line are considered to be the most powerful. Alternatively, a sigil may have an abstract or semi-abstract or pictorial form. Sigils have many potential uses. Spiritual protection is a common one, especially when used during demonic conjuration. Sigils may appear in any medium, physical or virtual, or only in the mind. Visual symbols are the most popular form. Now, in this video, I won't be going into specific techniques on how to design sigils by way of binding and numerical ciphers, as this is more of an introduction and a general informational video. However, if that's something you guys want to know about, I can teach you guys how to create your own sigils and how to cipher out sigils in a different video if you wish. Right, now that we've got that little preamble out of the way, let's move on to the real point of this video. I know you're all familiar with the thought that symbols rule the world. It's a common theme that I've spoken about for years on my channel, so you should all know what I mean when I say this. If you haven't seen all of my videos, I highly suggest you go back and watch my Occult 101 series, as it breaks down some of the more basic concepts behind symbolism and its effect on the subconscious mind. Just so we're clear, when I say symbol, I also mean sigil. Every sigil is a symbol, but not every symbol is a sigil. And the thing that separates the two is the creator, or the magician, or the sorcerer's intent when the symbol was designed. Now, chaos magic. Chaos magic is a contemporary magical practice initially developed in England by Peter J. Carroll during the 1970s and 80s. And his conception of chaos magic draws heavily from the occult philosophies of Austin Osman Spare, whose works are considered foundational reading for any chaos magician. His technique, known as sigilization, became the core element of chaos magic and has developed into a popular element of Western occultism. Spare died in the 1950s, long before chaos magic was thought of. He did not conceive of chaos magic. However, many of his magical beliefs were incorporated into chaos magic theory, which is about using ideas and practices that are helpful to the magician at that moment, even if they contradict the ideas and practices used previously. Generally speaking, chaos magic is much easier than ceremonial magic, and that's because ceremonial magic relies on specific beliefs and old occult teachings about how the universe operates and how things relate to each other and how to approach various powers. Ceremonial magic often refers to authorities of antiquity and voices of antiquity, such as passages from the Bible or Kabbalistic teachings or the wisdom of the ancients. However, none of that matters in chaos magic. Tapping into magic is personal, willful, and most of all, is psychological. Spare's spiritual legacy was largely maintained by his friend, the famous Thelemite, who a lot of you guys may have heard of before, author Kenneth Grant. In the later part of the 20th century, Grant's beliefs regarding sigilization provided a key influence on the chaos magic movement. Chaos magicians have expanded on the basic sigilization technique, inventing new uses for sigils outside of ceremony. The term hypersigil was coined by Grant Morrison, who used it to refer to an extended work of art with magical meaning and willpower. A traditional sigil can be turned into a hypersigil by becoming an extended artistic activity that can take the form of a poem, story, song, or a dance. Gordon White developed a technique of shouling, which involves launching a group of sigils for a set of related aims. For instance, instead of sigilizing for money, sigilization would happen for a pay rise, new clients, or a promotion would become the new line of focus. Anything to help facilitate and shift the probability of the overall aim into happening. So you're not exactly creating a sigil for that specific one outcome. You're creating a sigil for other outcomes that will help that outcome come about, okay? That's basically what Gordon White's shouling technique is about. Now, in chaos magic, a sigil, servitor, egregor, and godhead form what is called the fluid continuum. And these work alongside one another as stages of progression. For example, we start with a dumb sigil, representing something but that does not actually think. This is the first stage of the continuum. However, when this dumb sigil has been charged for long enough by way of our attention and directional energy flow, it then turns into what's called a servitor, which can either be completely stupid but capable of doing complex tasks, all the way up to being able to think on its own and deduce things in its operation. Within chaos magic, a servitor is a psychological, logical complex deliberately created by the magician for a specific purpose that appears to operate autonomously from the magician's consciousness, as if it was an independent existing being. Okay, I'm going to say that again. In chaos magic, a servitor is a psychological, logical complex deliberately created by the magician for a specific purpose that appears to operate autonomously from the magician's consciousness, as if it was an independent existent being. Now, once a servitor gets really big, when it becomes too much for one individual person or one individual magician to handle, it transforms into what's called an egregor. Now, an egregor is a concept representing a distinct non-physical entity that arises from a collective group of people. And at this point of the continuum, the egregor is capable of making some of its own demands, guiding its own work, and in general just taking on a life of its own. Grant Morrison has urged that modern corporate logos are a form of sigil, a condensation, a compressed symbolic summoning up of the word of desire which the corporation intends to represent. Their ever-presence in visual life makes corporate logos a form of viral sigil, infecting the mind and polluting the environment. Now, if an egregor continues to grow, it reaches the final stage of the continuum, which is called the godhead, something that has grown so strong that the people involved with it take up a subservient relationship towards it, often worshipping it or appealing to it for help, much like the peace symbol or the Christian cross. Now, I'm going to put a few examples here on the screen just to help flesh out these ideas a little more about what a sigil is, a servitor, an egregor, and a godhead. And as I previously mentioned, building on the ideas of Grant Morrison, all company logos are sigils, okay? And this is a topic that we will discuss further in upcoming installments. For now, I just want you to note that the more notoriety and exposure and recognition and attention that a brand receives only serves to further power its sigil and therefore send it further up the line of continuum. So for instance, when the McDonald's sigil was first created, it was just that, a dumb sigil. Just an M, right? But now, what, 50, 60 years later, in 2024, McDonald's is now operating as a multi-billion dollar worldwide corporation. So we know that it has gone through those stages of the continuum, okay? And the same can be said for all the mega companies, all the big brands like Nike and Apple. We have literally seen these brands transform into commercial giants. And without a doubt, go from dumb sigils into egregors and even in some cases godheads, because people do worship some of this stuff. There are some people out there that really do worship Apple and technology. Now, given what we know about the nature of an egregor, we can make the logical conclusion that if these so-called mega companies are operating as egregors, then there is, without a shadow of a doubt, a distinct non-physical entity attached to each of them This is to say that there will be one individual non-physical entity attached to the Nike sigil, one distinct non-physical entity attached to the Apple signal, the Apple sigil, the McDonald's sigil, and so on and so forth. And I think sometimes they even give you a hint to what these entities actually look like in their sigils, like with companies like Starbucks. I also believe that this applies to celebrities. Once a sigil has been assimilated to a particular person on Earth and taken through the continuum by way of climbing the ladder of fame and success, I believe that non-physical entities are then attached to these celebrities by way of this sigil or brand logo. Well, what a surprise this here is. And this makes even more sense when you look at this match. You see, egregors require offerings, which is why so many of these companies are knee-deep in the child stuff, okay? Such as Balenciaga. They do it because the non-physical entity that has been made manifest from that company requires sacrifice. And again, this match only lends further credence to this idea. And there is one more match that ties all of this together that I'm not even going to say out loud. I'm just going to flick it on the screen for you. You can pause it if you want, and I'm sure you'll be able to connect the dots from here. I cannot say anything on this particular platform. Right, part two will be out very soon, where we'll go further into the idea of company logos and egregors. And if you guys are interested in it, I will show you how to create sigils and how they do it, because it comes back down to the tumbling and ciphering stuff, which I've been teaching you, which is why I've been teaching you it, to tie it into the sigil stuff. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed. The next video will be out shortly. Drop a like on the video if you enjoyed it. Send it to a friend. Take care.